Yeah, we are recording. All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Rant Show.
Yeah.
Got Dead Penetration here.
What's up?
And we are going to talk about some articles. Some of the articles I didn't cover last time, which means I should have probably had my articles ready. That's okay. I know where they're at.
We're practicing.
So, let's see here. Where did we start? Oh, we had a lot. We had a whole lot of these. All right. So, where did we last leave off? I'm looking. Oh my God, there was too much. I forgot how much I already posted. Okay. So, we were going to do an entire show about this on the rants thing, but now we can probably just talk about it here. So, bounding into comics, remember, we're still on September 26th, so we're just a little bit behind, but still means something. Mark Miller, Marvel, DC, and independent comics only make up 9% of comic book market in North America. That means everything I've done also is included. If it's not manga, it doesn't count. So, if it's not manga, it counts, is what I meant to say. Mm. Because the manga market is...
It's overtaken it.
It's taken it over by... If the American... Okay. If Marvel, DC, and indie comics make up 9%, that means that 89%?
Yeah.
No, 90%. Because it would be... 90, yeah, it'll be 90% of the fucking market of comics is manga.
Well, yeah.
Wow. And Mark Miller basically has said that the state of the comic book industry in reaction to the news that JHU Comic Books in Manhattan will be shutting down. Back at the end of August, JHU Comics announced on Facebook they would be consolidating their operations and shutting down their store in Manhattan. They posted that after 10 years of operation in Manhattan, after decades before that as Jim Handley's universe, JHU Comic Books will be closing at the Manhattan location at the end of September. Store explained the decision. Rising costs have forced the JHU to make this choice, and they have decided that the best way to continue to serve NYC comic fans is to focus on the operations of the flagship location, located at 299 New Dorp Lane, Staten Island. More recently, they announced that this Wednesday will be the last day of our Manhattan location. A few things to say. First off, from Sunday to Wednesday, all back issues and all pre-2023 publication date trade paperbacks and hardcovers will be half price. Come get some stuff so we don't have to carry it back. They continued, second, we will happily accept anyone who wants to volunteer Thursday or Friday helping us pack. Please reach out and let us know. We should be here both days, and we could really use some hands on deck, and would love to see some familiar faces one more time. The shop then concluded, finally, we want to thank everyone for their continued patronage. We wish you all the best, and remember, keep reading those comics and don't stop being true believers. Reacting to this recent post, Miller wrote on X, Jim Handley's store in New York is closing. Unthinkable news, and surely to God, a wake-up call to the big two. He continued, Marvel, DC, and the U.S. indie companies added together are now 9% of the American domestic market. How does this happen when the characters are more famous than ever?
That means probably a good time to start buying comics.
Right.
That's like World War II when
you
people
might
were...
be right. In a follow-up, he wrote, cut to the usual suspects saying everything is fine, but look at the shelf space in Barnes & Noble. Talk to your retailer about cuts he's making.
I saw that. Just a small section.
Mm-hmm. He then declared a strong Marvel and DC urgently required again for the health of the overall American industry. This is an iceberg tip. Miller would also provide more details on the state of the comic book industry, revealing that much of the domestic market is now dominated by manga sales.
Well, and you got to think too, for one graphic novel of Marvel, which is like, what, 5-6 comics sometimes, maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. It's a whole section of a storyline, usually. They usually charge almost like $40.
Yeah.
You can get like a whole volume of manga for like $9.
Yep. He wrote 79% manga, the rest mostly Dogman. I love Dogman. I love manga. But the complete collapse of the American industry is as devastating as the collapse of the British industry in the 90s for hundreds of American writers and artists. Miller previously declared the comic book industry was in the worst state it's ever been back in August. During an appearance on Thinking Critical Channel, Miller stated, "The retailers are struggling out there. They're dying. All my friends and retailers are saying it's never been. They've never known it as hard as this." Mm-hmm. What do you make of Miller pointing out that Western comics only make up 9% of North American comic sales? Mm-hmm. Well, like, we're trying.
I mean, they need to start making the stories that people want to hear.
Yeah.
Since they're not top dog, they don't need to be selling them at the prices like they think they are.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, if you make it worth spending... Right now, people have other things they have to spend their money on besides comics sometimes.
Well, he said... Okay, I like this guy. He says, "How does this happen when the characters are more famous than ever? Vita Ayala, Tom King, Dan Slott, Heather Antos, Heidi McDonald, Ta-Nehisi Coates, King Baby Mark Waid, Kelly Sue DeConnick, and so many more. They told us if we don't like their politics, don't buy their books. And we didn't."
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't!
And think about the last, three or four Marvel series on Disney Plus? Mm-hmm. Bombed. You know, it's all been written like just woke bullshit.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear that shit. Despite how they react online, that is a very small percentage of what people think. I think, for the most part, most people think rational.
Right.
There's just... The only problem is a lot of people with voices to speak out on the internet are the woke mob. You know, you think about the news companies. Everybody's far left. You to feel shameful for being white male, single.
And we definitely got to talk about that.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. But anyway, Chuck Dixon has been saying this for a while, pointing at the numbers. The fact is, people aren't buying the vomit that these the big two puts out anymore. Their best number one selling books would have been canceled for lack of sales 20 years ago. They rarely make money on anything. DC doesn't even have offices anymore. They closed down.
Yeah.
Independents are growing, and for good reason, but the sad part is young people are all reading manga now and don't know about modern Western comics. Look, I'm trying. I'm trying, okay? I'm reading indies. I've been reading a lot of indies. People have been asking me for more Chaos Comics. Can you please read more Chastity? Some guy wants me to read The Boys. He said, "Hey, can you read the continue reading The Boys?" So I'm gonna. Well, I've already read 6 volumes, but he wants me to read the 7th and the rest of them. I said, "Sure, fine."
Is he buying them?
I don't know.
Probably.
It's promotion either way. I'm trying to get people to, you know, but. And then basically says, with serious cutbacks now, maybe Zaslav finally shuts down DC, Iger shuts down Marvel, IDW seems close to dead, Oni Lion Forge was up for sale, and Embracer might as well shut down Dark Horse. Boom still has Netflix money, and Disney's investment for now. Titan has a benefactor, and Dynamite, I don't know how they're still standing, losing most of their licenses. Now, there would be a good thing. I like Dynamite, and I support Dynamite. However, they treated Chaos Comics pretty fucking harshly. And they took Purgatory, they took Evil Ernie, and they took a lot of other Chaos Comics characters. So now, Brian Polito is doing his own thing with Coffin Comics. So if Coffin Comics makes enough money, they may be able to buy the rights back to their own characters, which would be excellent. Because I don't know what Dynamite's done to these characters and how good their stories are, but if anything, I want the characters in the hands of the people that created them. Yeah. Like, I want Polito to have the right to the characters that he created.
Or people at least know the story enough to continue. Fans, you know.
Yeah. And I don't know. Dark Horse is a number 3. It's Image. Yeah, Image is pretty much the second biggest one, Image Comics. And I have no idea how in the hell Dynamite is still going myself, but I don't know. I still buy their books, and I still promote them here. And, of course, I've been promoting the Dark Horse Eerie books, the Eerie from the 1960s. They put out a big bundle of those on Humble Bundle, and I bought all those, and I did the very first issue of Eerie, which was 1963. Wow. We looked at some real old horror stories. Yeah, really good black and white stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff.
Wow.
All right, so we've got a weird case here. New York Post. Tech CEO Pava LePere, 26, found dead with blunt force trauma inside her apartment.
Oh,
a female tech CEO who appeared on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list has been found dead in her Baltimore apartment with blunt force trauma after being reported missing. Pava LePere, 26, was found inside her luxury Mount Vernon apartment by police Monday morning shortly after she was reported missing.
Who is she?
The EcoMap founder was found with blunt force trauma, according to police. The medical examiner's office took possession of the victim's body, police said. It is unknown whether LePere had any guests over prior to her death. It appeared she was single on her social media pages. That's pretty horrifying, building tenant Chris McNeese told CBS News Baltimore. I mean, just for that to happen anywhere in the city is obviously a bad thing, but it's hard to imagine why this would happen specifically in this building. The Forbes 30 Under 30 honoree lived in the former Congress Hotel, which has been renovated into apartments. One-bedroom apartments go for around $1,500 a month. LePere started her eco company from the dorm room at Johns Hopkins University. The purpose of her company is to make ecosystems information available to everyone, along with powerful technology to digitize ecosystems, according to the company's website. Whether you're talking about a large college alumni network or an entire industry, ecosystems are largely invisible. When ecosystems are invisible, they are accessible. When they are inaccessible, they are inequitable. When they are inequitable, they are inefficient. We're making the invisible visible so that all ecosystems can thrive, it said. LePere's company has managed to raise $7 million in funding in the last year and a half. EcoMaps also prioritizes diversity. They said it was 50% female and 50% people of color. Her clients also include the Aspen Institute, Meta, and more, according to its website. The company released a statement following her death, sending its condolences and calling her passing deeply distressing. Oh, whoa, hold on, we got a new article. Hold on. Maybe that's bullshit. Let's see. Oh, okay. There was a cop recognized as an OnlyFans model by a subscriber that... Basically, the person got arrested. And, hey, don't I know you from somewhere? That's...
OnlyFans!
Yeah, that's pretty fucking funny. It says, saw you and your husband last night for $30. And she's now facing a probe. Oh, shit. The Minneapolis Police Department is investigating an officer for her side gig as an OnlyFans model after she pulled over a subscriber during a recent traffic stop. The unidentified cop who works in the city's 4th precinct is being probed for any policy violations she may have committed running the adult content subscription service while working for the department. Yeah. Wow. The driver said it took him 10 minutes to recognize the 35-year-old officer as someone he's seen over the past 5 months have sex and post explicit photos online. We were doing a little talking and checking, and I was like, man, she got an OnlyFans page. I'm on her OnlyFans page, the driver told Fox 9.
I've already paid half of my fine.
You've got to go to the VIP, and you got to go to the VIP, and you get to see the videos of her and, I guess, husband. I guess that's who it is. They do full sex videos.
All right.
The department opened an investigation into the account, which states that she is free-spirited, overly optimistic, creator of sexy content to please others, according to a screen grab. Oh, shit.
Here, let me
solo see. Play, and no, we don't have a picture. Solo play, amateur porn, sexy pics, custom videos, and pics.
Now, I found some of my friend's porn pictures on the website.
Yeah.
A while back, but it had been years
you're gonna find
ago
everything.
They put them up.
We take any allegations of policy violations seriously, and the chief has ordered an investigation, Chief of Police Brian O'Hara said in a statement. The MPD's off-duty employment policy prohibits officers from working in any business that is not compatible with police work, including any establishment that provides adult entertainment in the form of nude, semi-nude, or topless exhibitions. If all we're talking about is naked pictures behind a paywall, the mayor has no issue. However, the chief will determine if there are any policy violations, a spokesman for Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey said. The driver had a problem with the officer's authority after realizing who she was.
Yeah, that would be a damn...
You can't arrest me no more. I've seen your private parts, he told Fox 9. I wouldn't want her to be arresting me and just saw you and your husband last night for $30 have sex on OnlyFans. I just can't respect you or the precinct that you're working at. She got fucked. Like, could you imagine that? Like, she literally can't arrest that guy because that dude has way too much information on her.
That is.
Yep.
Well, that's why they say it's a conflict of interest.
A timeline for the department's investigation hasn't been released. A Missouri high school teacher resigned from her position when the administrators found out about her account.
Oh, yeah.
St. Clair School District launched an investigation into English teacher Brianna Copid. She was initially placed on leave after rumors of her account ran rampant throughout the school community. I don't want to fight the school district. I'm just ready for peace, Copid told the Messenger on Tuesday. I knew that nothing was ever going to be the same if I went back, so that was just the best option.
Now she works in Slutlandia.
Yep.
It's a Slavic country.
I don't know. She's going to have to hope she makes more money off that damn OnlyFans because... Well,
she might as well advertise, I'm the teacher and got kicked
out. The teacher school. And the cop. Yeah. I got kicked off the force. Like
I was putting concealed weapons in my mouth.
Daily Mail. Hercules star Kevin Sorbo, 65, brands Hollywood men bumbling idiots and claims that feminists are forcing males to become wussies. We normalize androgyny and misunderstand masculinity. Kevin Sorbo has branded Hollywood men bumbling useless idiots with a misunderstanding of masculinity. The Hercules Legendary Journeys actor, 65, who claimed to have been shunned by Hollywood for his conservative opinions last month, wrote a controversial new essay for Fox News in which he blasted woke Hollywood, taking particular aim at Timothy Chalamet, 27, and Billy Porter, 54. The star had proudly noted that he made fame playing a Greek demigod branded the current fondness for androgyny and fashion, the masculinity crisis. In his attack on the modern-day male, he also insisted that feminists have won when men give in to their base desires, such as drink, drugs, video games, and porn. He penned, it doesn't really matter what end of the masculinity spectrum you fall on. If you're a victim to your own base desires, the feminist culture has won. You're exactly the kind of wussy man they think they want you to be. He says, Kevin shot the... we know about that. His new op-ed on masculinity will no doubt cause stirs thanks to his personal attack on beloved Hollywood actors and fashion sweethearts Timothy and Billy. Weighing in on their androgynous style, he wrote, society today seriously misunderstands masculinity. On one hand, we love to normalize androgynous Billy Porter-type men who sport skirts and poofy dresses. GQ's 2019 Best Dressed Man, Timothy Chalamet, for example, often wears clothes that your grandfather wouldn't have been caught dead dressed like Chalamet. He went on, everywhere we look, bold, confident, self-assured females upstage passive men who recede quietly into the background. Into the basement, into the past, fathers in particular.
The guy from Dane?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Fathers in particular have become the butt of every woke Hollywood jab, the bumbling, useless idiots who contribute nothing to their families or communities but sacrifice themselves as objects of ridicule. Kevin alleged the depictions of men in Hollywood feature the brutish he-man who only abuses his strength and makes a mockery of masculinity.
I think he was in a gay movie with Armie Hammer, which you've heard about what happened to Armie Hammer.
No.
Cannibalism.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Branding women.
His new...
the fuck out of
him. Damn. His new essay comes a month after Kevin said he has been ousted by Hollywood for his conservative opinions and Christian beliefs on an interview in Fox News.
Yep, he does a bunch of Christian films.
The native Minnesotan claimed he and his agent had parted ways after the Andromeda Star was blacklisted. He said, "It was sad to me. You know, my manager and agent for so many years said we can't get you jobs anymore, work with you, because you're a Christian."
How bullshit is that?
Yeah, literally, that's literally what he said.
If people think that Christians aren't under attack, they are blind.
Yeah.
That is the big thing.
Yeah, it's... Let's see. Let's see, yeah, it says it right here. No, because you're a Christian and being a Christian and being a conservative. We have such a huge divide in our country right now, and it's perpetuated by the mainstream media, perpetuated by movies and TV.
I think there's way more conservatives than what they actually think. It may even be more than 50%.
So, but
if you listen to anything from the news media, they're always going to wind it like, oh, you're alone. There's hardly any conservatives around. You know, their goal is to separate you from the flock and make you feel alienated.
Right.
And when you think about it, the transgender community and gay community, every community out there saying you have to like this or else, they're the more marginalized groups. You know, there's less of them than there are. I say that. You know, now they're kind of indoctrinating kids and stuff, and that's really going to fuck some kids up in about 5 years.
Yeah, 5-10. So, metal injection. Lars Ulrich is happy you're buying or stealing Metallica's music. In an open conversation with the Smartless podcast hosted by Jason Bateman, Sean Hayes, and Will Arnett, Metallica's drummer Lars Ulrich reflected on the evolving nature of the music industry. His insight shed light on the seismic shifts that occurred since Metallica's inception, from the advent of streaming to the plight of emerging artists. Ulrich acknowledged the dramatic transformations that the industry has undergone over the course of the last decades and expressed gratitude that people still engage with their music, whether through streaming, purchasing, or, interestingly, the contentious stealing of records, the drummer offered. Well, obviously, it's changed quite a bit. And in your guys' industry, some of the same things that we were doing 20 years ago are happening. Big picture, and I know this may sound like a little bit of a cop-out, I'm just happy that fucking anybody cares about what we're doing and shows up to see us play and still stream or buy or steal our records and whatever. The engagement itself, I think, is the triumph and the victory. Obviously, it's way, way harder for a lot of the younger bands nowadays because they don't get the support of the record companies for basic things just like gear and tour support. So there's very much of a different thing. Despite the current hurdles, Ulrich remains hopeful that genuine talent and stellar songwriting will eventually find its audience. His optimism echoes the belief that deserving artists will be heard. However, he acknowledges the harsher reality faced by young bands struggling without the support that was once readily available. Talent and good songwriting eventually will find a home with a larger group of people. And whether you do it from your bedroom or through a record company or whatever, I believe that everybody will be heard eventually if they're talented. But it's tough. It's tough for a lot of the younger bands out there, and a lot of the bands that 20 years ago could make a living playing clubs or theaters are having a harder time now because they don't sell as many records, and you really have to be out there pushing it.
Yep.
He also said there was a dilemma with legacy bands. And he said there's a lot of bands that haven't been around as long as we have. Excuse me. There are a lot of bands that have been around as long as we have that simply don't want to make records anymore because it either doesn't work for them or the business model of it doesn't work for them, Ulrich noted. And I can't speak for everybody else. We love writing songs. Being creative is a significant part of who we are. Obviously, I understand that we're exceptionally fortunate, but our success gives us the opportunity to sort of do all that. But if somebody said you can't write or make records anymore, we'd probably stop what we're doing because it's just such an essential part of just our existence as people. Okay.
You know, it's really, a lot of people don't know a path for it now.
Yeah.
Too. Like, it's true. I think of it in terms of, like, work. If you're working in an industry that's very out in the open, meeting people, you get known by at least so-and-so number of people. Same way with music. You play here, you play there, you make it a regular occurring thing so you have a fan base and build up and travel, you know, start because people talk, you know, and network and all that. You get your name out. I think it might, I'm not saying it's easy, but it might be easier than what some people think.
Right.
But, you know, now I work at the other business place. People from all over the country see me. And
well, people know you work at the casino, dude. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. I'm super cool.
Ooh, excuse me. Yeah. Changing weather. Anyway.
Those Asian women are good.
I know.
I have them where they cut their hands over their mouth. You know.
Really?
Oh, man. I'm blushing. I was like, good night, you're hot. You look pretty good looking tonight.
Oh,
you
Lord.
Always say pretty good looking. Because for some reason, I said pretty good looking just as good as really good looking to me. Yeah. But to them, it's, oh, I'm only pretty
good
looking.
Yeah, 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 they do that.
And plus, you get used to saying that. And, oh, what do I have to do to get really good looking? Well, let me think. And right. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay, so Christine Baumgartner is kicking herself for filing for divorce. According to a new report, Christine Baumgartner regrets filing for divorce from Kevin Costner after not getting the hefty child support payments she requested from the court. She's kicking herself for forcing Kevin to agree to a divorce when she was living the high life with unlimited funds at her disposal and everything paid for by her husband, a source close to the situation told Radar Online. Boom! Oh, the truth hurts, doesn't it? During the divorce proceeding, the handbag designer who shares three kids with the Yellowstone star was first granted $129,000 in temporary support. However, she requested that she be paid $248,000 a month.
This is the spirit of Christmas, if ever I heard it.
Arguing that her children were used to luxury and she needed more to take care of them. Ultimately, the judge slashed the amount to $63,000 per month. Seemingly due to the court proceeding not going her way, the 49-year-old opted to settle out of court with her former husband, allegedly on the advice of her lawyer. An insider said to the National Enquirer, Christine caved because her lawyer advised her to cut bait and run. Details of the settlement between Baumgartner and Costa remain unknown. However, it is believed that the mother of three received $1.5 million, which was the amount agreed upon in the prenup, in addition to other undisclosed fees. It comes after Costner's lawyer, Laura Wasser, argued that her client was initially willing to find a middle ground out of court, but Baumgartner's demands were unrealistic and frankly outrageous. Right? Yes.
Goodness.
The lawyer also pointed out that they were initially set. Yeah, they were initially set for a settlement conference, but Baumgartner insisted on a full evidentiary hearing instead. Wasser said in court, Christine fails to inform the court that her settlement position through the months of June, July, and August was so unrealistic and frankly outrageous that Kevin had no hope she would be more settlement oriented at the VSC, the Voluntary Settlement Conference. The high-powered divorce attorney also pointed out that Baumgartner's legal maneuvers had only increased costs for both parties involved. Kevin Costner is jumping for joy over the ruling. Following the court settlement, sources also shared that Costner was ecstatic he came out on top. According to Radar Online, an insider said that the actor is jumping for joy over the judge ruling in his favor. At the same time, another stated it's not so much the money as exposing Christine as the gold digger he believes she's shown herself to be. On the other hand, Baumgartner found the entire ordeal to be quite uncomfortable and is relieved that it's finally finished. A source said, per the Daily Mail, it's been a living nightmare, and now she just wants to move on and start fresh and begin making her new house a home. The divorce proceeding lasted for the past 4 months, all through which they only spoke through intermediaries.
Yep. There's a lot of dislike in that group. I think he's got more reason to dislike her than the other way around. And good thing, only good thing that'll come of it's for the next guy, because the next guy will see it coming. Oh, you were married to Kevin Costner. You're the one and fucked him over? No, thank you. I'll make a deposit and leave.
Yep. So we got another one. Yahoo, according to the Atlanta Black Star, stop humiliating him. Jada Pinkett Smith admits she never wanted to be married to Will Smith and resurface clip as fans dredge up her entanglement with August Alsina. Jada Pinkett Smith is unable to escape the hard-to-swallow truth she has shared in the past about her marriage to Will Smith, not even on a joyous occasion. The actress wished her husband of 25 years a happy 55th birthday with a heartfelt message shared on Instagram.
He needs to get rid of her ass.
She began, Willard, I am so glad you were born on this day. Without you, I would not have experienced the greatest joy of my life, the love of our family, and continue to express gratitude that they chose each other as life partners. On this divine assignment, we've chosen to walk together. I'm grateful for the wells of laughter along the trails of tears we shared. Thank you for helping me to learn to embrace it all with a smile. Here's to 100 plus more birthdays full of growth, acceptance, and joy, she wrote on September the 25th. She accompanied the post with a throwback photo of the couple and their two children, as well as Smith's sons Trey from a previous marriage when they were children. Many of the comments joined her in wishing the movie star happy birthday, and others simply expressed appreciation for the couple's ability to grow together throughout the years. Other users sounded off with remarks about the red table talk, host Pat's remark about Smith and extramarital dealings during the relationship. 28 years plus an entanglement or two here and there, blessed up, snidely wrote one person. In a 2020 episode of her Facebook Watch show, the Girls Trip actress overshared that she had an entanglement with singer August Alsina during a period of separation from her husband. The admission spawned years of criticism. She really don't romantically love this man, read another comment. A third user said, I hope you will stop humiliating him. And a fourth person renewed interest in another admission that took place at the infamous Red Table. Aren't you glad you married him even when you were crying and didn't want to? So cute, they wrote. In the resurfaced clip from 2018, the 52-year-old said she cried all the way down the aisle on her wedding day because she did not want to get married. She admitted she felt forced to follow through with the ceremony at her mother Adrienne Banfield Norris urging after Pinkett became pregnant with their son Jaden. I was under so much pressure. I didn't know what to do. I just knew I never wanted to be married, she added.
No, fuck them if you didn't want to, I think, you know. I think in that case,
they exchange vows.
That's why you should be very careful about who you hook up with, because you might be stuck with them for 18 years.
Yeah, they exchanged vows on December 13, 1997, and welcomed their first child 7 months later. Elsewhere in the episode, Smith said he always envisioned himself married with children. He was previously married to Cherie Zampino for 3 years. They divorced in 95. Epic Games has let Bandcamp go amid layoffs. Bandcamp is now owned by SongTrader. Really not much else to say there. I am a woman with a beard. But people stare, but I love my hairy chin despite name calling. A woman with a beard who gets constant stares in public and verbal abuse online is hitting back at trolls by embracing her facial hair.
Is it intentional?
Kosi Nekadzi Botolezi. Wow. Botolezi?
Lezi for sure.
Has been aware of her excessive hair growth ever since she was a teenager, noticing the growth on her face, chest, back, arms, and legs. Good Lord!
Her family name goes back to the Dikes.
Now 42, she says she didn't view it as a concern growing up due to other female family members.
The bearded clam bakes.
Also being hairier than usual. But last year, curious to get answers from a professional, she went to see a doctor. I grew up accustomed to hairy women like my aunts being seen as blessed, strong, and strict, so I figured it was something I'd inherited. Kosi, a freelance book editor from Johannesburg, South Africa, told Need to Know. She said she never felt the need to approach a doctor about her body hair, and she had no physical issues. But when she did finally visit her GP, they suggested hormone level tests for fertility and PCOS. She continued, however, they both came back negative. I could have children if I wanted to, and there's no need for hormonal treatment. It all seemed fine. However, the doctor did tell Kosi that she might have hirsutism, a condition that causes excess hair to grow on certain parts of your body, mostly affecting women. She said, I never heard of it before, but it did make sense. I remember talking to my family members about it and warned me that shaving would cause it to grow more, but I thought that was just a myth.
Get lasered.
She tried a number of different hair removal techniques because of the nature of her job required to be more presentable, but nothing worked. The more I shaved it, the more it grew. I tried waxing, but it proved to be both costly and painful. Kosi decided to try laser hair removal treatment instead, which worked for a while, but the hair soon came back with force. Wow. After 10 sessions, the hair became finer and the skin was smooth. I was convinced it worked. However, when I stopped for a year, the hair started growing back and I had to go back to razor shaving. Instead of fighting the facial hair, she decided to embrace it. I stopped shaving and instead started to love myself. I learned that self-acceptance is a crucial aspect of self-care. It's a foundation for our confidence and self-esteem. I've had to remember that beauty comes in all shapes, sizes, and forms, and I'm bringing body hair to the beauty equation. However, it's not been an easy journey. People in public have reacted with shock, fascination, disgust, and disapproval of my beard. But I am actively working on unlearning the need for external validation. Unfortunately, people can be judgmental and cruel towards someone who looks different in some way, so it's important to remember that their opinions and comments do not define my worth. Now, I will say one thing.
At least she can't help.
Like, she can't help it. She did 10 treatments of laser, and it just fucking
did not help.
Yeah.
I'd say keep waxing it, you know.
I mean, it's going to...
damage the follicles, because that's how I had to get rid of the hair growing between my eyebrows.
Oh, wow.
You pluck them until you ruin the follicles and they don't grow back.
So, Daily Mail, we've got some interesting shit here. I took my son Elon Musk to a sex party when he was 9. Tesla CEO father says his son was in love with Amber Heard, and Depp blames him for breakdown of marriage. Grimes is a bit of a nutcase. And XAA12 is a weird name in an exclusive interview.
And he said, you could shit on my bed anytime.
Errol Musk isn't too sure how many grandchildren he has. 16, 17? It's hard to keep count, he says, I'm sure. At the age of 77, he has 8 children, the eldest of whom, Elon, is not only the richest man on the planet, but, well, let's just say he's a huge chip off the old go forth and multiply block. Yeah, indeed. Earlier this month, it was revealed in a sensational new biography that Elon had a secret 11th child. It's the latest addition to the billionaire's sprawling family tree, which is singular in its complexity thanks to his many relationships with women, some of which appear to have been conducted simultaneously. Tellingly, as I discover in this exclusive interview, Errol's take on his son's progeny is spectacularly relaxed. Men trying to spread their seed is natural. I've got about 5 people who claim they've got my child. Who knows? When Elon was living with me as a boy and I was mixing with the horsey set, Errol owned the stables and thoroughbred show jumpers. I didn't know that. He stopped counting the number of women you'd been with after 200. After having 11 children is great. Why not if you can afford it? Clearly the apple hasn't fallen far from the tree. I met Errol at his rather fabulous open-plan house on the coast of Western Cape, South Africa, shortly after the publication of that new explosive biography of the Tesla magnate, Twitter ex-owner, and space buccaneer. It's a moment when Errol is very much in the limelight, thanks to author Walter Isaacson's damning portrayal of him as a manipulative, abusive husband and father. So much so that in the book, Elon describes his childhood with his dad as one of mental torture. Here, for the first time since the book's accusations made global headlines, Errol reveals his side of the story. And there is much to reveal. Not least his response to accusations that, as one of Elon's partners once put it, the entrepreneur was conditioned in his childhood to see life as pain. Not forgetting, too, Errol's take on the much-vaunted thesis that Elon's chaotic, almost masochistic love life is a direct consequence of his tortured relationship with his father. Errol and his wife May divorced in 1979, and Elon and his 2 siblings stayed with their mother. A year later, when Elon was 9, he went to live with his father. In the new book, however, Elon describes his father as pure evil. So was Elon's childhood really one of utter agony? Unbridled rubbish, says Errol. He raises his hands in the air as if to say, what the hell? On the kitchen island are some birthday cards. One is from Errol's daughter Rose, Elon's half-sister, and the youngest of the 2 children from Errol's 3rd marriage to Heidi Bazudenholt. Boy, I don't know how you pronounced her name. Rose has written, thanks for being such an amazing dad. I love you. His sister Allie sends birthday cards too. Every time she sends the same message, says Errol, everything I am, I owe to you. He adds, it's true of Elon, too. Everything he is, he owes to me. I say that with humility. I did my best. That book is not the truth. It's fodder for a play. I emailed the author and told him that. As well as thoroughly defending himself, Errol paints a startling portrait of his son's personal life and discusses in rather bold terms what Elon is like as a husband and father. Perhaps most fascinating of all, he offers an insight into Elon's relationship with Hollywood actress Amber Heard, who he dated for several months in 2017. "I thought Amber Heard was perfect for him," says Harold. As you may remember, Depp notoriously accused Elon of having an affair with Heard while they were still married. The couple later endured several court proceedings after Heard accused Depp of beating her. Depp was eventually awarded damages by a jury. Errol continues, Depp blames Elon for the breakdown of his marriage and is on the cusp of suing him for that still. Elon was in love with Amber for a long while before she got divorced from Johnny Depp. It's natural to want to be the dominant seed, but if you have children in vitro, Errol frowns and shakes his head. It becomes apparent when Errol discusses his son's checkered love life that he's not what you might call progressive. The facts, though, are these. Following the desperately sad death of Elon's firstborn child with his first wife Justine in 2002 from sudden infant death syndrome, the couple turned to IVF to father their twins and again for triplets. They divorced in 2008 but shared custody. Same year, Elon married British actress Tallulah Riley and they went on to marry and divorce twice, finally ending their pairing in 2016. 2018, Elon and the Canadian singer Grimes used IVF to help conceive their son. Bizarrely, they called him X. Later, they welcome their first daughter, Exa Dark Sidereal, whom they call Y, via surrogate in 2021. The birth of their third child, and this is fucking awesome. A son named Techno Mechanicus. I'm fucking sorry, that is badass. The kid's name is Techno Mechanicus, and he's gonna have all kinds of money. Wow. So there's gonna be some fucking crazy fucking kid running around with the name Techno Mechanicus.
That Tallulah Riley.
Yeah, she's hot. Was revealed in Isaacson's book this month. As if all that wasn't enough, Elon is also father to 22-month-old twins, apparently again conceived via IVF with his employee. His employee, Shivan Zillis, who were born in 2021, just weeks before the birth of his daughter, Exa. He had some children with one woman in vitro while he was living with another woman, says Errol bluntly. That's a tricky thing because children ask questions later on. Why did you do this or that? Did you love my mother? Children are very critical. They don't forgive their parents for things they think their parents could have done differently. I've experienced that with Elon. X is a weird name for a child. Completely weird. I think the Grimes girl is weird, too. The last I heard, she was living with a woman, and then she's back with him, then she's gone again. She's a bit of a nutcase. Now Elon's on his own. He wants a woman who's got brains and beauty. When discussing his son's approach to fatherhood, it becomes clear that Errol thinks Elon's offspring are worryingly cosseted in comparison to how he raised his children, who were brought up in South Africa. I bought Elon his first motorbike when he was 8, and his brother Kimball was 7. Or Kimball, rather, was 7.
Kimball!
Not Kimball!
Very South African.
They rode them mostly on the farm, but later took them to the public roads wearing helmets. They never had any accidents. Kimball said to me recently, in reference to the mighty mollycoddling of children these days, that bullying them motorbikes at that age was insane, but my kids had a real... That buying them motorbikes at that age was insane, but my kids had a real upbringing. We went down the Amazon, went to Tanzania and northern Zambia, where everyone you met had an AK-47. Well, damn! At the age of 12 or 13, they could take a Learjet around Heathrow. Their kids, on the other hand, all have nannies and have had since they were born. Because they're so wealthy, each one has their own European nanny, so at the age of 14 or 15, they can't cross the street unless the nanny takes them. He claims that Elon spends very little time with his children, and the result has been quite disastrous. They're not connected to him at all. The same as Kimball, who now sits on the board of Elon's company, Tesla and SpaceX. They were not hands-on parents like I was. Like Elon, there's a blunt honesty to Errol that at times leaves you speechless. Like when he tells me about a particularly risque party to which he took Elon, who was not yet 10. The crowd I was with were very open-minded, very free-thinking, a wonderful crowd to be with. I'd go from the office and Elon would be in a school uniform. At this one party, a very well-known man threw towels at everybody after the meal and said, "Off with your clothes, we're getting in the pool." I had to take Elon to the library and said, "Just sit there." Within a few minutes, everyone was stark naked. It was quite weird being with a rather elegant socialite who was saying, "You can go out with me next Saturday if you want." I'm thinking, why would I want to go out with you when I've already got what I want? She was stark naked and his eyes dance as I'm left to fill in the blanks. It was the year before this party that Elon had gone to live with his father, a wealthy former engineer who also part owned an emerald mine. At those stables where pretty women were coming and going. Oh, okay, I see. Errol also remembers Elon's arrival a few years after his devastatingly bitter split from his wife, May. I got a written message on my desk one day that someone had dropped in saying I had to collect Elon at Johannesburg Station at 10 in the morning the next morning. I went there waiting for the Durban train to come in, and there was Elon. He was hanging out the window, this tiny little boy. May said she was sending Elon because I'd threatened to cut up her face with razor blades. Can you believe it? She wrote this on a piece of lined paper like you have at school. I handed the note to my lawyers. They have it still. I was just very happy to see Elon. You asked me how this affected him? Well, he was very unsure of himself. Until he was 12, he slept with me in the main bedroom and my big double bed. He had his own room, but I never told him to go to his room. I never said, you can't stay with me. I never said anything. He would just get into bed, this little boy lying on the side of me, read with me, and fall asleep. His brother came to live with us when Elon was 12, which is when he started sleeping in his own room. Errol's eyes soften when he speaks about his sons. There are photographs of the boys beside private jets with their father, on boats and in luxurious cars on the school run. They grew up flying private aeroplanes and having thoroughbred horses. It was a privileged world. I used to take Elon to school in a Rolls-Royce Cornish, colored metallic gold. He said he was bullied there. He's just talking rubbish. I took him to school every single day of his school life. He was pushed down the stairs by another pupil once. The incident is described in Isaacson's book.
He was pushed down the stairs once.
Come on. The incident is described in Isaacson's book, although it's claimed the child pummeled Elon's face and put him in the hospital. After getting home, it's said that Elon had to stand for an hour while his father screamed that he was an idiot and worthless. Errol concedes, I've been told I can be painful to be with, which is probably true. I'm quite mercurial. Elon isn't. People say he's my clone, but I look at him and think he's a better version of me in many ways. Even though he's called out you for being evil? I'm not evil, so why should it hurt me, he asks. It only hurts you if it's true. I would not call either of my boys idiots. I may use the word in a different sense, such as you'd be an idiot if you did that, but it's very different to calling them idiots. When Elon was pushed down the stairs by a boy whose father committed suicide... that sounds convenient. Elon had said it was a stupid thing...
Don't worry, we got him back, son. They think it's a suicide.
Elon had said it was a stupid thing to do to take your own life. I wanted to go to the police and press charges for assault, but the headmaster asked me to come and meet the boy. He was a lot smaller than Elon, and he was weeping all the time. The boy had found his father's body and had to live with that. I dropped the case and bought another house in a different part of Pretoria.
No excuse for pushing people down the stairs, though.
Right. The boys would qualify to be in the catchment area for a different school, and I moved them there. Mm-hmm. It was the easiest way to solve the problem. The longer I spend with Errol, the less I see the monstrous man in the pages of that biography. He's charming, entertaining, and dare I say, rather attractive when he throws his head back to laugh. He also has a hugely appealing attitude to life that you can see reflected in his innovative genius son. In short, the rules that constrain normal people simply don't apply to the musts. But this no-limits approach to life brings complications too. Not least in the birth of his last two children, both conceived when he was in his 70s. For his last blast at spreading my seed was with none other than his stepdaughter, Jana. What? Jana was 4 years old when Errol married her mother, Heidi Balzenhart, and was 30 when... Holy shit, that's right out of the goddamn... Like, I didn't think you could do that. Like, I didn't think you're allowed to have, like, kids with your stepdaughter.
Well,
but, like,
not blood daughter.
No, I know, but they do that in, like, the visual novels, you know.
Porn.
Well, the visual novels, they do that. Like, oh, it's your stepdaughter. Like, yeah, it is a stepdaughter, but isn't it kind of weird?
Technically.
I mean, Jenna was 4 years old when Errol married her mother, Heidi Balzenhart, and was 30 when she gave birth to Errol's son, Rushi, now 6. 2 years later, they had a daughter, Mia, now 4. As for Elon, he learned he had a new half-sister from the pages of our sister newspaper, The Mail, on Sunday. He was, we're told in the Isaacson biography, completely creeped out. We did get a lot of flack from the family about Rushi, concedes Errol, but my affairs are my affairs. Reports have said that father and son have had little to do with each other since. So why did you have sex with little Janna, father? Well, I wasn't getting any younger.
Did you see that ass?
Right. Reports have said that father and son have had little to do with each other since. Yet Errol shows me an email received from Elon in the morning we meet. We communicate. I've seen him since my daughter was born in December 2021 when I was in Texas where Elon lives. It was prior to Christmas. Elon was there but was flying off again to open a big factory in Germany. He had 2 hours to spend with his children and me. You know how long I saw him for? I don't know, a minute and a half really. Just hello, 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 I'm off. Does he, I wonder, attribute his son's behavior today to his male-dominated childhood? For my sons, growing up without a female figure, just with a father, I don't think that was good for them at all, he says. The boys saw how pretty women were coming and going all the time.
C-U-M-M-I-N-G.
Yeah, pretty much. He reflects for a moment, then adds, because of that, I don't think they see things in the right way. Well, I mean, that was a fucking article and a half.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Wow.
Well.
Yeah. And that's just the fucking pick of the iceberg. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg for articles, guys. We still got so damn fucking many articles to do. And we can do them all. Well, not all of them, but we can do more of them next time, which would be, we'd be in September 29th, so we're getting there. Just going to take a while.
Just a few.
So yeah, these games, they're basically Sage demos. Some of them haven't been fully cut. I've been lazy, been playing games, been making content for you guys, you know. So, yeah, I haven't done all the cutting, but, I mean, like, there's really nothing to see. You're just seeing me go into a folder and pick out a game. It's not a big deal. They're all fan games.
Oh, yeah.
So, at any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and I will see you guys next time on the Grim Rant Show.
Later.
Enjoy the decline.